Hi, everyone. I'm Rod Boyer, and you are listening to an extended interview that my colleague Elizabeth did with Margot Lindauer, Pike class of 1995. Pleased to offer this to you. We couldn't fit it all into the podcast, and so you'll find here a lightly edited version, and I hope you enjoy. There's a lot of great information and great conversation.
Interesting that, you know, the approach is really to sort of look at the, for both, it sounds like the larger ecosystem and figure out how do you sort of partner with those pieces for support, right? As yes. opposed to being like, well, this is your legal thing. And then,
right. and I think, right. I mean, I think it's interesting. And well, so there's two parts of this that I think is really fascinating. One, I think it's surprising to some students, particularly at the beginning, because they're like, wait, I signed up for a domestic violence clinic. Why am I talking about housing?
Right.
Right. Or I don't know anything about the shelter system in Massachusetts. Why am I calling a shelter hotline with a client? Mm-hmm. And those are the conversations that I think are the most important growth-wise for the students, particularly as they start their legal careers. Because if everything is just a legal issue that students, soon to be lawyers, think that they can solve with a legal outcome, their clients are not going to be better off, right? The legal system is one system. And oftentimes lawyers are really loud. you know, I think, you know, lawyers have sometimes not the best reputation, and sometimes that's warranted. And I think it's important for students to really know that they are one voice among many, mm-hmm. and they're one set of skills among many, right? Mm-hmm. There are social workers, there are doctors, there are civilians, there are teachers, that, right? There's so many people that touch the families that we work with, and the students are just one. The mm-hmm. other thing is they're students. And they're students doing a course for 15 weeks. And these are people's lives. And I really stress over and over that they are one moment in a client's really long, complicated lives. Yes, the lens of the family, or the, I like your phrasing of ecosystem, right? Because family is so dynamic, right? Like what is family can mean something so different to so many people. But it's really clear that without a healthy backbone, right, folks are not going to be able to make healthy decisions for themselves individually mm-hmm. or for their families. And in the case of my work or the work of the clinic, it's really impossible to make a decision solely in the interest of safety, right? Or of in the interest of this particular relationship, if there aren't many other things in place,
yeah.
like stable housing, like food, like, you know, your children are going to school or employment or economic stability. And so of course we can't solve all these things immediately, but if we don't understand them, mm-hmm. we are potentially giving advice that might not be in a client's safety interest. And not only doing in a vacuum, but doing with support, right? I frame my clinic as a little law firm, right? I'm the partner and my students are my associates. They're in charge of their cases. They team lawyer. So they have each other, which mm-hmm. is really great. They're in charge of their cases. They are the main point of contact for their clients. They are calling opposing counsel, right? They are the lawyers on the case, but they're practicing under my bar certification. So what that means is that everything that's filed, that every case that's presented in court, I am there, I am by their side, and I'm supporting them. And the approach I take is a non-directive teaching approach where students, you know, I'm not feeding students like do A, B, C, D, and E. It's more, let's kind of talk about your approach. how are you thinking about this issue? How are you thinking about this challenge? How are you thinking about, you know, let's use a specific issue, you know, say we're having a challenge with getting the order served on the defendant, right? So in Massachusetts, for a restraining order, the civil restraining order has to be served by law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Many of our, for notice, right? So you can't kind of go forward with an order without the defendant being
right, without them knowing. Fair right? enough.
And so good service is service by police, but many of our defendants abscond the police, right? Many of our defendants either, you know, don't want to answer the door for the police, understandably, or don't have a stable address, mm-hmm. or aren't in Massachusetts, right? And so that's a challenge that we confront in many of our cases. So the situation that a student would come to me with is, okay, let's talk about it. What are the options, right? Do we know the person's in Massachusetts? If so, how do you know that? What sort of communication are they having? With whom? Is there another way to serve the defendant?
Right.
Could law enforcement do that? Could law enforcement not do that? Excuse me. So it's really kind of brainstorming. Students and their colleagues go back, think of what their approach is going to be, present it to me, we talk about it, and then they move forward. And kind of what I see over the course of a semester is, which is kind of the most satisfying thing as a teacher, is students coming all the time to me like, Margot, do you think this is a good idea? Or this is really an issue. And it might not be an issue at all, or it might be something really solvable. And by the end of the semester, students coming to me and saying, here's the issue. Here's what we thought about. Here are the pros and cons of this approach. Here's why we have decided to go this route. What do you think? Intimate partner violence. We know 1 in 4 women have been impacted by sexual assault. The number is like around 1 in 10 for individuals who identify as men. This is a public health issue. And so it really should be informing everyone's work, right? Mm-hmm. If 1 in 3 people had diabetes, right? That would, you know, that would change how doctors approach or primary care doctors approach conversations around nutrition, right? And so I really want this information to kind of percolate into the, you know, ecosystem, right? The butterfly effect and change workplaces generally.
Right. Right. That's interesting. Yep. Yep. It's so interesting, right? So we have, I will send you a link to it, but we had this fascinating 2-part series that we did last year about the future of learning. And so we had some experts come in from the National Association of Independent Schools and have this really fascinating conversation with our head of school, Ashley Marshall, about not just what is happening in school right in this moment, which last year was a crazy moment. But when we think about where education needs to be at the elementary and middle school level in 10 years, when the preschoolers that we have now are graduating, right. What do they need to know? And there was so much of this realization that there is really a shift towards how well can students learn? What do they know? Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
But how well can they learn? How well can they take on a new challenge, perceive and work their way through a new concept? And that really has been a shift that education across the board is having to make, but we as independent school faculty and staff are really needing to dig into.
Yeah.
Because when you look at what the economies for those students are going to be when they graduate from high school and college, it's very different.
Totally. And access, right? So I also have small children and I have a 5th grader who is very precocious academically. And so seeing her learn about something or hear about something and then do her own research
mm-hmm.
on her own. Right. And so, you know, our children now, I mean, notwithstanding the pandemic, right, but have, you know, elementary school children now have lived through a very, very volatile presidential, American children, mm-hmm. presidential election, where children and families' bodily safety was threatened. So I can give an example. My oldest was in kindergarten when President Trump was elected. At the time, she was at a bilingual public school mm-hmm. in Cambridge, yep. Called Amigos, and you know, Trump ran on a platform about building a wall. Many of her friends at Amigos were immigrants, some were undocumented. And so after Trump won, there was desperation and fear among children about being deported or being stuck behind a wall.
Right. Or losing their parents.
Or losing their parents, right.
And people in their ecosystem.
Right. So there was a lot of conversations with five-year-olds because children were coming to school scared to go to school because of leaving their parents or being separated from their parents, right? So, I mean, one example, not all children experience sure. that, but 2016, then we have the 2020 election, we have the COVID-19 pandemic, we have the January 6th insurrection, right? We have Me Too, we have so much has happened that young children are aware of because of their access to information, even mm-hmm. if they have no, you know, even if you're not watching the news all the time.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so I think about my daughter Ella's ability to engage and talk and ask questions about things that will be history mm-hmm. In a way that I just had no idea. There was no information and, you know, right. I couldn't Google it. I couldn't, you know, I didn't see CNN.
Remember
right?
back in the day when right. we couldn't Google it. No, it's very true. I think that there is a level of, I don't even know what the right phrase is, like discernment that kids need to have around information that we did not develop until much later, because that information is just so available. And the other thing that we talk about a lot here at Pike is also the whole digital citizenship aspect.
Yes.
You know, and there is, so that's we have in the upper school, right? There's they have a one-to-one iPad program, and all of my daughter's schoolwork is centered around being online. Right. You know, she's got her iPad and she's got Google Classroom. And so not only is she sort of living in that world from an academic standpoint, but then of course, you know, you're doing things even as simple as you have a question for one of your teachers and you want to ask them the question and you're going to send them an email. How do you do that as a kid in a way that is respectful and appropriate, right? Like,
right.
And then trickling all the way through to how do we act in digital spaces? How do you interact with peers? How do you interact with others? How do you appropriately have conflict online? Because that these kids are living online. And so if they live online, then they will have positive experiences online and they will have negative experiences online. And how do you have those productively? It is an entirely different set of skills.
It's totally. And I mean, also you bring up such a good point. Like, how do we disagree?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which is also something that I think, you know, places like Pike are teaching students how to do, both from in an online space, but also in an academic space and mm-hmm. in a social space, right? We're not always going to agree. Yes. And that's okay.
Yep. How do we find consensus? And then what do we do when we don't? Because there of course will be instances where you're exactly right, where you disagree, and how do you do that in a way that is still productive, even if you don't ever come up with, great, we're on the same page here.
Right. And how do you move on and still be able to be part of the same community, right? Mm-hmm. Because you, I mean, hopefully you have values that are intrinsic to how you treat your community members and each other and yourself.
Yeah.
That allow you to be like, okay, we disagree, but.
Yeah. And I think that's especially important as we as a nation continue to, sort of pocket up, right? Yep. Where people increasingly move more and more to be with folks who are like mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we, as a school community continue to focus on what are the aspects of diversity that we can use to drive the future of our school, and think about diversity as a key aspect of our school's success, as opposed to a box that we're checking.
Yes.
You know, that ability to recognize the importance of disagreeing in a productive way, not always finding consensus, mm-hmm. Working with people who think very differently than you do, you know, from our perspective, being able to do that starting in pre-K means yeah. that by the time you get to be an adult, you can go into an experience, an environment where everyone is not like you, does not agree with you, does not think like you do, speak like you do, whatever,
right.
and still be able to be productive in that space.
Right. I think that's wonderful.
Okay. That is a lot of what I had. What am I forgetting? What are you, what did you want to talk about that?
I had no, I'm like so excited because one of my bucket list items was always to come back to Pike. And so,
oh my gosh.
Yes. I remember when I was in eighth grade and I graduated and I guess I came back maybe when I was in ninth grade too, because I had friends graduating in ninth grade mm-hmm. and they always had these incredible graduation speakers. And I was like, maybe one day I could be. So this is kind of, you know, that thing.
Perfect. I love it.
No, I mean, I would just want students. I feel very, very blessed and filled with an incredible amount of gratitude that I have found a path that I like, and that I feel like has been valuable, and that I've done good work with good people. And I feel really lucky about that. I also always felt, even when I was at Pike, that I wasn't the strongest academically, and certainly wasn't the most confident, and did not follow a traditional path in general. Right. And so I would want students, I mean, I don't know who's listening to this, I guess, but, I guess I just, I feel very lucky to have ended up where I am. And I also feel that my experience is an example that you don't have to follow a straight path to end up in a certain place.
I love that.
And I think that that's a message. And I work when I was at Pike, so I don't know, Pike feels very different now than it was, but it was very much like you go to Pike, you go to Andover, you go to the Ivy League, you get like a good job, or you go to grad school, right? There was a path. And if you veered off that path, or this was my perception, if you veered off that path, you were bound to be unsuccessful or unhappy or whatever. And I had that struggle for a really long time because I was like, this is not my path, right? Andover was not my place. I mean, I went, mm-hmm. but it was not a good fit for me. And I hope that if students are listening to this, that they really just follow their gut about environments and places where they want to learn and be part of, because those are the places where they will thrive and yeah. they will have the most impact.
But it also really helped me figure out that advocating for myself was something as an adult that I was, that it was my job to do.
Right. And no one was going to do it for you. And I think that's sometimes my concern about, that's my concern about environments where you are preparing young people for success, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's this idea that there's success. And success is when you feel, you know, whole and happy and grounded. not if you're on Wall Street. I mean, if that's what makes you happy, sure, fine. But I think that was the part that I did not get. And I would hope, and it sounds like Pike is doing a lot more about cultivating individuality and individual paths, and academic success looks different for different people. And that is very, very important.
And I have found it very interesting as a parent of a sixth grader, right? One of the things that her advisor talks about all the time is in sixth grade, they have this study skills class. And a big part of what they do in study skills is help the sixth graders develop self-advocacy.
It's incredible.
Help them be the person who goes to their math teacher when they don't understand. They have their advisor to back them up, but the advisor's not going. Your parents
right now, it's
aren't going. I don't speak to my daughter's teachers about things unless they ask for me. And otherwise,
it's so
that
important.
Idea.
I mean, it's so important. And just as someone who has taught in an under, I am not currently, but I have taught numerous times at Northeastern in the undergraduate program.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing how little self-advocacy some undergraduate students, I mean, I had parents calling me.
I'm sure.
Of adults.
I'm sure.
I was like, ma'am, I can't speak with you. Your child is over 18. But just even that was a thing that, and so I think learning to advocate for yourself in a way that's not like the dog ate my homework or like I submitted the paper, I don't know where it went, you know, that kind of thing. And more really struggling with this topic or this skill, and I'm having trouble kind of putting the components together. How can, you know, I figure out next steps?
Yeah.
That's something that we all need to do in the workplace and family life and everything.
Yeah. And I've been very impressed with how focused on that Pike
is. I love
that.
I love that.
We were driving to school this morning and my daughter mentioned that she had emailed her math teacher yesterday because she knew that she had a test. She couldn't remember if it was today or tomorrow. And so she said to me, oh, I emailed Mr. Spector because I wanted to figure that out. You know, I emailed him to find out so that I could figure out, like plan out my studying. And I'm like, in sixth grade, would I ever
amazing. Have no, that's incredible.
directly email my math teacher without asking my mom for help, in order to plan out whether I needed to study more tonight or could I split it over 2 days?
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And those are the skills that will help her in life in general, which makes me so happy.
I know. Yeah, right. I look at her and I mean, this is not unique to Pike. I see my older daughter's self-advocacy skills, although those are very much tied to her sports experience and her coaching, right? It's incredible to me, the influence that a good coach
coaches.
It is something really exciting that Pike is working on, that sort of self-advocacy piece. And again, tying back to the future of what learning needs to be for students.
Yeah. And learning isn't just kind of like check the box, right? That this is an opportunity for them to like really figure out what sorts of things they like, what they don't like, what experiences do they want to have in a safe environment where they'll be supported.
Yeah, absolutely.